It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Harold Fanning Jr., and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, citizens of the universe, this is Roster Watch. My name is Alex Dunlap. I'm joined by Cody Carpentier. And Cody, dude, believe it or not, we're back. We're here on a Monday and training camps have started. The training camps have started and we don't have too much news coming out of it. But here on the podcast feed and on the YouTube channel, you're going to be getting a lot of training camp updates as we're getting our credential requests in for these various training camps and also just keeping a maniacally close eye on it. A quick update for what's going on the site. You can see if you're watching on YouTube, the QR codes there and the links to Roster Watch to sign up for a pro membership. Now's the time to do it. We have up now, I've updated from version 1.4 to version 2.0 of the Ultimate Draft Cheat Sheet, the original three-step cheat sheet at rosterwatch.com for PPR leagues. And also what went up on Saturday or Sunday, I've been testing it all weekend, is the Superflex sheet. So the two quarterback and Superflex is live. Cody right now still maniacally testing the half point PPR and standard cheat sheet. That should be up very, very soon. And we also got the offensive line rankings done. Those should be posted whenever our web guy gets them posted. So by the time you listen to this, they'll likely be up over there. So make sure and check it all out. Check out all those other tools. And also, of course, once the season starts, you're going to want us in your corner helping you personally with your sit start decisions, helping you with your waiver claims, helping you with all that stuff. You get it all with a pro membership at rosterwatch.com. All right, Cody, let's get started here. So basically, we had a lot of rookies report on the 17th. That's when most teams had their rookies report. For the veterans, a majority are going to be reporting tomorrow on Tuesday. Monday, today, we have Dallas veterans reporting for Dallas and Oxnard, California. We also have the Kansas City Chiefs reporting today as far as veterans. Other than that, we had the Chargers who reported like 5 days ago. On the 16th. And that's why we've been seeing some of these reports kind of coming out of Chargers camp with what's going on with those guys. And I have a whole grip of news from them. But before we do, just some stuff that's sort of kind of ancillary to what's actually happening in camp, but some things that are going to be important to monitor as we get in. One was what happened over the weekend with Seahawks tight end Noah Fant, or I guess former Seahawks tight end Noah Fant, was actually released by the Seahawks. And it just reminds me that when we were up there covering the draft this year and watching John Schneider and Mike McDonald talk about – it was Schneider who mentioned it, but he said, if not for all the injuries, the tight end who they drafted, Elijah Arroyo, an all-senior bowler who we loved, he would have been a top 15 pick. And I just wonder, what does this do as far as – Elijah Arroyo for you? We had not even really been considering him for redraft. He, certainly in tight end premium, dynasty stuff, we were obviously in on Elijah Arroyo. But does this bring him into focus? Because when you think about the Seahawks, we know from what they've said, they want to be more potent as far as a running attack. They want to play tough defense. The matchup tool and the strength of schedule tools kind of align with that. It's looking like the Seahawks are going to be tough on defense for a lot of fantasy positions. But as far as the offense, if they're not going to be running the football, and considering what a pass catcher that Kenneth Walker is out of the backfield, they have Jaxon Smith-Njigba, they have Cooper Kupp, and other than that, dude, it's like it's not really much of anything. And I know we think there's going to be a higher run concentration, but even if that's the case, they have two guys, and then they have like Marquez Valdes-Scantling and guys like Jake Bobo and Cody White and stuff. I guess they did take your boy Torrey Horton in the fifth round. Elijah Arroyo, though, does this move the needle with you at all?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, we love Elijah Arroyo. You talked about the thought that if he was healthy and would have had a more consistent 3 years there down there in Miami, like he was in this conversation. We came out of the Senior Bowl with rave reviews because the guy came in 15 pounds heavier and looked like a modern day, you know, fill in the blank at the tight end position. So I'm excited to see him get the opportunity to take a step forward, take a step up so soon, and not have to kind of be in this tight end room where we just look up there and we go, man, no offense up there, man. This nothing's going to happen as far as targets go. I think he's got a competition on his hand to begin with. AJ Barner, I don't think he's near as talented as Elijah Arroyo, but he did play last year for Seattle on like 660 total snaps. 310 were in line, 132 in the slot, a couple dozen out wide. He's a 6'6", 251-pound tight end from Michigan. And, you know, over Seahawks on SI, we're writing up just like, you know, this is going to be a competition to watch. I have notes about the offensive line stuff of most competitions to watch for training camp, but tight end is one now with Fant departed. Barner had four touchdowns last year. He had 30 catches on 38 targets, 245 yards. I don't think he's going to be this like big blockade for Elijah Arroyo. If Arroyo is healthy and can get in there and learn the playbook and get on, he should have no problem. But I do think it's going to pose at least a little bit of a threat, a little bit of you know, it's not going to be smooth sailing. So I think it's a positive for Elijah Arroyo long-term and short-term in Seattle. And to be honest, like you said, it's Marquez Valdes-Scantling on the outside as kind of that wind sprinter, and you got Cooper Kupp and JSN who kind of dominate those middle sectors. Like that, your big red zone target should be the 6'6", 6'7", Elijah Arroyo.
He's a unit, dude. I mean, he's a unit.
Yeah.
Do you think he should be taken in ahead of guys like Theo Johnson or Juwan Johnson and stuff, or do we just – is that –
I think that Juwan Johnson is an interesting year expectation, like floor. I think that's a very good side-by-side look at how I would perceive his season to unroll if he's the starter, Elijah Arroyo, I'm saying. Theo Johnson, I think Theo and Arroyo side-by-side, I have, you know, not high expectations, but I think – projected. I think they're both projection because they're both very athletic tight ends. Obviously, Theo Johnson from Penn State, super athletic, 6'6", 254. Kind of the same dude like the year before that we thought, you know, kind of our analysis of Arroyo to a lesser extent, but not a lot of weaponry, obviously, outside of Malik Nabers and Wandell Robinson in New York too. So I think that Theo get targeted. I think you have a little more of a – we trust the offense in Seattle to score touchdowns more consistently – more competently on offense
than you do with the Giants or the Saints.
I understand there's a lack of talent in those receiving rooms in New Orleans and in New York, but I still think I would take Elijah by a touch just because I think you can have a little overall, a little more competency in there. And even though, you know, the offensive line rankings, they're going to be dropped on Roster Watch here soon. Seattle doesn't grade very well. It's not a horrible. It's one of those things. They're going to be one of the lowest graded.
They have some pieces who can kind of coalesce though and come together.
Yes. There's potential within that group, even though it's going to be looked at. You're going to be like, man, that Seattle offensive line blows. It's like, well, yeah, it does. But I think there's
potential. They got some pieces that can come together.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally agree there. So keep an eye out for that. Maybe I'll get these updated. It's not going to be a major. I'm not lighting my hair on fire to get Elijah Arroyo into the same territory as the Juwan Johnson, Theo Johnson, Chig Okonkwo type of, you know, tier. But I think you can consider that if you draft, you know, 17 rounds before you go kicker in defense and you need a tight end too. Let's see. Let's go to the next one here. What about Jaden Blue on our friend Marcus Mosier's podcast? They had an ex coach, I guess, who still talks with a lot of the Cowboys coaches, who said that Jaden Blue is borderline lazy
and they don't like the way he's been acting. We certainly know dating back. Jaden Blue's never been a just your model citizen in the locker room. It's not that he's been a bad guy or he's got in legal trouble or anything like that, but people have always said kind of behind the scenes that, you know, he's maybe saw him in the same way that, you know, from a Texas perspective, the people might've seen like a guy like Isaiah Bond, personality wise, could maybe be a little bit mercurial at times.
Good word.
Maybe a little bit me first, but, and, you know, and just do a little digging into him. I mean, this is a guy that sat out his senior year in high school, you know, because he didn't care. He wanted to get to college, didn't want to risk getting hurt. But then Jaden Blue tweets out, he's like, production's going to drown out all the noise. Like, and I tend to agree. Jaden Blue's got all the juice in the world, man. He can do it all as long as he doesn't let those fumbles bite him like they did at Texas and get on the bad side of the coaches. He's going to look like the best running back that they have. If Javonte Williams looks like the Javonte Williams of last year and Miles Sanders looks like the Miles Sanders of last year, I haven't done much with him based on this stuff. I've always kind of known that he was going to get in there and maybe have to do a little bit of growing up, but I kind of agree with him. He gets out there and produces. Like, they're not going to be able to put that genie back into the bottle.
I would agree with you. We've talked about this many a time on many a show here in Orange Bloods because we talk about Jaden Blue in Texas and stuff. I think that as long as, again, he isn't too much of a problem, then they'll continue to push forward. And once he gets on the field, as long as he doesn't fumble, he should be fine and look like the most dynamic player in that backfield amongst Miles Sanders and Javonte Williams, even though Miles Sanders released a little workout tape last week I saw. The one player I will mention – I think it was a picture. I think it was a picture of him doing like a wall sit with a med ball or something.
And okay,
it was like,
great.
Y'all must have forgot when I was healthy. Something along those lines. Anyway.
Do you get fantasy points per wall sit photo in your league?
You might. Yeah. I thought it was funny that like Byron, we were in our group chat and Byron was like, you know, who else is in that room? And I wanted to like snap back and go, well, you quick, how fast do we forget about Deuce Vaughn? Yeah. But I didn't do it. I didn't do it, Byron. But I did think about
this, Bill Maffa.
This one name. And I took him in the 21st round of the Scott Fish Bowl because Scott Fish Bowl is a Scott Fish Bowl. I took Phil Maffa in the 21st round because this guy had 1,000 yards last year at Clemson. He's had 20 receptions each of the last 2 years. He's 215 pounds. He had 900 yards the year before. We didn't grade him the highest. We didn't have a speed on him. We didn't think he was very fast. I think he's a low 4.6 guy.
But you have to admit we were biased from what we saw down the stretch of last season with Clemson where he was hurt.
He was hurt.
He was
big hurt. So I wonder. I do have that wonder. I wonder what the Phil Maffa thing looks like here in the first couple of weeks. Seventh round pick. So again, not really a lot to kind of lean into, but we've seen it before with the likes of Philip Lindsay and Isaiah Pacheco and Elijah Mitchell and things like this. So it wouldn't shock me in the slightest if in 2 weeks we hear Phil Maffa's, you know, getting some carries with the ones. But I would say the blue thing, I'm very on the fence about it right now because, again, I just know how fast it can go. If you become a little bit more of a problem, they'll kick you. And if you got it on the field, they'll bend a little bit. But I don't know, man. It's just one after another. It feels like over the last 4 years with Blue.
Yeah, it's one after another of quality ingredients when you get the Alpha seasoning created by Alex Dunlap and Cody Carpentier. Our Elite Spice Blend is available right now. Cody and I have been working for years to get this thing together. It's great on burgers. It's great on steaks. It's great on chicken, salmon, eggs, tacos, whatever you like. I put it on pizza. It's an amazing spice blend. It's called the Alpha. You can get it at alphaseasoning.com, alphaseasoning.com. Again, it's our own signature spice. It's our first one. We love it. Thanks so much to everybody who's been ordering it and buying it. We really do think it's the most versatile thing that you'll have on your spice shelf, and it's delicious. You'll love it. Your kids will love it. Your family, your mom, your dad, whatever. Alphaseasoning.com. If you're watching on YouTube, that's a live sales link right there that you can just click, Cody. You can just click it.
It's a new link that we got a little new feature to use here.
Yeah. So alphaseasoning.com, go and check it out. besides getting a pro membership at rosterwatch.com, it's a great way to support your boys. But the best way to support your boys is, of course, going to rosterwatch.com, getting a pro membership. Both are going to help you. It's just one's going to help you with cooking. The other's going to help you win a bunch of money and dominate your friends at fantasy football.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Alex, can I ask you a question about some of these reports that have come out the last couple of days? Like this Cleveland Browns one at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
About Dylan Gabriel.
So what happened is Judy Batista reported that she thinks the camp's going to start out on Tuesday with Joe Flacco as the number one, Dylan Gabriel as the number two, and Shedeur Sanders as number three.
And said that the Browns were blown away by Dylan Gabriel's processing speed during the offseason programming. That was also Judy Batista. And that he received a heavy dose of first team reps alongside Pickett during OTAs and minicamp. Like, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to make of this thing. And I've zeroed in on a date to get to Cleveland, to get to Berea. And I want to see it with my own eyes because I buy that they could be blown away by his processing speed on the book and on the board. But man, you get behind those 6'6" offensive linemen up there, that DeJuan Jones 6'8" left tackle. You get behind, you know, and the talent around you is Cedric Tillman, who I love, David Njoku. But then all of a sudden, it's like Jamari Thrash. That's not in. You're not at Oregon anymore in a high speed offense, throwing the ball to Tez Johnson and Troy Franklin and stuff. It's a whole different ball game. I don't know. Obviously, Stefanski wanted Gabriel for his offense. His offense is notoriously run by a pocket passer.
Yeah.
Shedeur always made sense to me in that. Gabriel, not the most. I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it.
I don't know what to make of it either. But I think for that, it's like prognosticating. It's going to be a weird quarterback situation that's not going to have much continuity through the year. Right?
Is it potentially just Flacco and it's just going to be Flacco, or do you think it's just going to be a turnstile?
I think it's just, dude, it's just like if you just look at it, it's like the Browns, they basically over the course of the season have an average implied team total of 18.55 points per game, which is the lowest of anybody in the league. I mean, that's well clear of even teams that we predict are going to be terrible, like the Saints and the Giants and these kinds of teams, right? They're up there closer to 19.5 points per game as opposed to 18.5. Cleveland is in the absolute basement. And so are they even favored in a single game? So they are favored in one game. They're favored in week 14. I don't know who they're playing. I guess that's probably the week they're playing either the Saints or the Giants or some team like that, right? But they're going to lose a lot of games, man. And what happens when you lose games? You're going to mix quarterbacks in and out and see what could work. See if you can catch lightning in a bottle. And I think we'll see Dylan. I think we'll see Flacco. I think we'll see Dylan Gabriel. I think we'll see Sanders. I think we'll see. I think we'll see all four of them. So unless they get to one spot there on the Ferris wheel where it kind of, you know, it stops and it gets going back again and things get going with the dude. I have a hard time thinking as DG too. There wasn't anything through the process that where I stopped and I was just like, oh wow, look at this guy. To me, the only thing that stopped me during the process is, wow, he is small. You know, I stand next to him. I'm like, dude, are you kidding? Like, he's like, I'm not the huge. I'm like, I'm like 6 feet tall. Like, I mean, I think is he shorter than me? It seems like he's shorter than me.
I would say he is. He measured in officially at 5'11 and 1/8 inch. You remember that one picture of Bryce Young when he came out behind that offensive line and he was basically hidden? So he was 5'10 and an eighth. So he was 1 inch shorter. Gabriel's literally now going to be – this is a bigger offensive line than Carolina had. DeJuan Jones, what, 6'9", 6'8"? Like, that's a foot.
Yeah, it's like
– your left tackle was a foot taller than you.
And what size were his hands? I know he's left-handed. Do you have his hand measurements pulled up?
DG?
Yeah, Cleveland in the wind.
9 1/4.
That's right at the threshold. It should be probably. Is it 9 1/4 or 9.5 that Gil Brand always used to say? I think he said 9 1/4. But still, like, it is kind of smaller pants, slight frame, Cleveland, wind blowing off the lake in November, just blowing the field sideways. I don't know, man. I think we're going to see a lot of
9 3/8 was the Gil Brandt thresh.
Okay. So right between those two. So below threshold for football grandpa himself. May he rest in peace.
I think Cleveland might end up being like a complete stay away. It's getting there.
Well, speaking of that, so what about Quinshon Judkins? So he had the whole rash of second rounders signing, some of them getting the fully guaranteed contracts. Like, I think I saw Luther Burden got his fully guaranteed, like Jaden Higgins did. Some other guys got, like, you know, not basically 90% of it guaranteed, a little bit more than usual. But they're all starting to kind of fall into line here, with the first domino being Alfred Collins with the San Francisco 49ers post Jaden Higgins. Quinshon Judkins, the Browns have just kind of told this guy some cockamamie business going on with these Cleveland teams, with the Cincinnati, with the, you know, the video you sent me earlier of Mike Brown and his take on where they are with Shamar Stewart. And then you get ownership from the Browns saying, look, we're not worried about Quinshon coming in and signing and being here for camp. We need to take care of this legal stuff first. That's first and foremost. I'm not saying that we knew that this was going to happen, but for all the Dylan Sampson that we have, I think it's probably helpful. You know, us saying to take Dylan Sampson wasn't us saying Quinshon's going to be charged with a crime that could keep him out of camp and could kind of cast a shadow on his rookie season with the Cleveland Browns, and something that should have been a banner year where he could have been lined up for a whole lot of volume. It was just us saying, well, we watched Dylan Sampson very closely last year, and he's awesome. I don't think we need to move Dylan Sampson up. You can take him in the 14th round before you take kickers and defenses in your kind of home leagues and stuff. Just, do you have any thought? Just where are you on Judkins? Are you taking him right now? Obviously, his ADP has fallen. You know, it's fallen by rounds. What do you think? At some point, does he become a value?
I think the way you phrased that was perfect. I think at some point he becomes a value. So he's going around the 70s right now. I think at some point he becomes a value is, for me, where I would feel good about it. Maybe this is bad. Maybe this is not. I don't care. Where I would feel good about it is once you get to that 10th round area, 9th, 10th round area. Like, I'm away from it right now.
What do I have him priced in? So right now I have him – that's super flex. Hold on. Let me go to PPR.
That might be too late for people. I understand that. But I when you deal with this, this is exactly what the hell's his first name? Brown. The brain's going empty right now with your dinging. Mike Brown, the owner of the Bengals, brought up – like, the one thing he brought up was – with the Shamar Stewart thing, with the contract, was about the guarantees on your deal being what the Bengals are trying to do. Essentially, let me just go through this really quickly. What the Bengals are trying to do with that contract essentially is allow themselves to get out of all guaranteed money if something detrimental to the team happens. Like, for example, Mike Brown used something off the field, basically – with women, hitting women, domestic stuff like this. That's the first thing he went to. The first thing.
Yeah, they cared so much about that when they drafted Joe Mixon.
That's the top of the line. Well, that's probably a learning experience, right? That's the first thing that comes to mind right away because that's what we've seen happen lately. And he goes, what Shamar Stewart's agent is trying to do is he's trying to say that if something happens, then all you can do is take away the guarantee for the remainder of the year it happened, but he still gets the remainder of the guarantee for the rest of the time, which, again, for me, bringing this back to Quinshon Judkins is saying he's already dealing with something, doesn't have his contract signed, isn't on the field. I don't even know what this situation is going to end up being or if there's anything else behind it that could potentially be oncoming or who he is. I'm just where he's going right now in the 70s, even if it gets to the 80s, is just too rich for me at this stage of the game. When you're talking about starting running backs going around him, you're talking about Caleb Johnson going around him, you're talking about Tony Pollard, even a guy that I'm not even that into, but he's the starting running back for the Tennessee Titans. Brian Robinson, like I'm not touching Quinshon Judkins right now until we get into the 100s, 110, 120. I need that 10th round to get here before I touch Quinshon.
See, I haven't priced in a little bit higher than that on the current versions of the cheat sheet, but it doesn't matter because yesterday alone, I did a 180 mock draft simulations. I didn't get him one single time. So it's like until I start getting to move him just because structurally it's something that's important. You did mention earlier that you had an Omarion Hampton question. And so I wanted to just get into everything that's going on with the Chargers. But before we get to the Chargers, there was the stuff about the weird start to camp for the 49ers wide receivers and just kind of get your take on these guys. Ricky Pearsall, he has the hamstring injury from earlier this summer. He's going to start out on the active PUP as well as Brandon Ayuk, who's still recovering from the ACL and MCL in November. Juwan Jennings, of course, is holding out for a new contract. We did have Mike.
Isn't that bizarre? He's holding out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's kind of got him a little bit over a barrel.
But he's like, he's not like Antonio Brown, Jamar Chase. Like, no offense, Juwan. I love you. But
yeah. Matt Mayocco, who covers the team on his pod, says, unless there's been some bad setback that nobody knows about, based on what we're told in June, Ricky Pearsall should be ready to rock and roll when the 49ers get on the practice field for the first time Wednesday. So we'll keep a close eye on that. But I like taking Jennings and I like taking Ayuk. Where they're going right now, like Jennings is like he's being drafted as a wide receiver 4. And like you said about Ayuk, if you can get him and it's Brandon Ayuk and he's just sitting on your bench, you know what I mean? I find myself getting some of those guys. You know, like if we look at Ayuk going off his wide receiver 50. Who would you rather have sitting on your bench? Like a guy going in front of him, like Darnell Mooney? Would you rather have a guy with the upside of a Brandon Ayuk with one of these teams that, you know, who as far as their implied team total over the course of the season, on average, is ranked 7th in the whole NFL? They're going to be scoring. And Ayuk is just a super talented guy. Like, I think Jennings and Ayuk are fine to take as long as you're not taking him as Ayuk is a guy who you're going to want to start immediately. But, dude, Jennings, like, if you get him as a wide receiver 4, I think he'd be a guy you'd be fine to get into your flex in PPR in week 1.
I would agree with that because of price. I'm more in on Jennings now than I was a month ago, as we've had that conversation a lot. If I was the Niners, though, just in football terms, dude, I would trade Juwan Jennings. I would, like – boot him, send him to, you know, send him to wherever, send him to Buffalo,
Patriots,
New England. Like I would,
he'd be a good Patriot. I would hate it for fantasy.
I think so. Exactly. I think so too. And I think I also look behind him and it's like, think about the Kyle Shanahan offense and be like, all right, could you envision, this is going to sound stupid, Isaiah Hodgins, who we already saw have, you know, a little bit of a season at one point for the Giants, Isaiah Nair, who people have called a freak.
With Jacob Cowing's still on the roster, isn't he?
Yes, Jacob Cowing still, but I'm talking about the big body guys that can kind of fill in. Nair compared to Jennings, like as a prospect, I understand. Mayer's
like a Tarzan, dude.
And George Kittle called him a freak the other day. Like, it's like, I would move on from Jennings, but from a fantasy football perspective, taking all things to consider, like going off around wide receiver 38, 40, like that's a great value at this point for Juwan Jennings with this expectation. I do think that, you know, Ricky Pearsall, if everything goes right, and I think the optimal player, the one player I would want in this receiving room, if all guys are healthy, I think would be Ricky Pearsall.
All right, let's talk about the Chargers then. So basically, The Athletic's Daniel Popper reported that the Chargers are now relying on Trey Harris to be their starting X following Mike Williams' retirement.
I think Trey Harris is interesting. I'll be honest with you, though. Like, so Trey Harris right now, if you look at all the ADPs, Trey Harris is going off right around wide receiver 58 by Marvin Mims and Jack Besh. Prefer him to both those guys. Wide receiver 58, 150th overall. But this is going to sound horrible, and I don't know how much on this ledge I want to leak out onto, but Quentin Johnston, a wide receiver 69, 184th overall, going after Jake Bates, going after Brandon Aubrey, a couple kickers, going right next to Cameron Dicker, right next to Anthony Richardson. I'm telling you, man, Quentin Johnston, if you're going to like just have him sit out here on this ledge, and I understand, like, Mike Williams retired. Trey Harris is a rookie. Ladd McConkey dominates in – he can win in every quadrant. But Quentin Johnston had 700 yards and 8 touchdowns last year. 700 yards and 8 touchdowns is not a fluke. And he's in his third season in Los Angeles. Like, I think this is an interesting trio here. I don't think they should sign Keenan Allen personally. I think that they're fine based on their pass volume. And Keenan Allen can do whatever – he can wait, do whatever he wants. But it was the third year at TCU for Quentin Johnston, too. The first year was 400 yards. Second year was 600 yards and 6 touchdowns. That third year at TCU is when Quentin Johnston broke through, had 60 for 1,000 and 6 touchdowns. I didn't think I was going to be on this. But the cost for Quentin Johnston right now, man, like you look at him and you're like, all right.
It's like wide receiver 70-something, right?
It's like, what are we doing here? Like, 68 is Romeo Doubs, 69 is Quentin Johnston. Like, okay. This is what I'm saying here. Like, I don't think this guy's going to win you your league or anything. But in the conversation of like a wide receiver 5, I would feel, I mean, I'll take Quentin Johnston as my wide receiver 5. Sounds stupid. But Trey Harris, yeah, that we've talked about the 5.15 yards per out run in college at Ole Miss last year, over 900 yards after transferring from La Tech. And, you know, that offense at Ole Miss was very much a, you know, different offense than anybody else really runs in college under Lane Kiffin with Jackson Dart, and everything was really thrown into windows and pockets that were projected, not I don't know how to phrase that. I've messed that up. But the idea that Trey Harris can just get into this Chargers offense in year one and be the X, have a 1,000-yard season, fill in, be the guy. I don't buy that. I think Quentin Johnston in year 3 is the guy that's going to overstep Trey Harris.
Oh, that's an interesting take. All right, and you wanted to talk about I there was a little note on Oronde Gadsden, who is the rookie tight end there for the Chargers. He's apparently been making waves, just somebody to keep an eye on there. He's actually getting some of this kind of just a bunch of this sort of Elijah Arroyo type of fluff out there. So make sure and kind of keep an eye on him. I'm not sure if you have a take on Gadsden, Cody, but what is it you wanted to get off your chest about Omarion Hampton? Is Najee Harris from the fireworks accident with his eye opens camp on the non-football injury list? The word getting out, though, is that the Chargers docs have not evaluated him yet. I'm not sure if they have by now. He has been in team meetings. As far as his status for when he'll be back and stuff, Jim Harbaugh just says, I'm not a doctor. You know, so that's kind of the backdrop of what's going on with Najee vis-a-vis Omarion Hampton. But you wanted to talk something about Hampton.
Well, I just had a question for you because I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I just brought up the question of like, what's the Najee Harris situation, and like, why haven't we got a distinct answer to it, first off? And I was talking about the idea that people were paying top 20 running back prices for Amari and Hampton, and I thought that was bad given what we know about Najee the last couple of years, being a 1,000-yard rusher four consecutive seasons, him going off like at running back 34. I was like, Najee's going to be the starter. Najee's going to get run. They're going to split this backfield, and Amari might even kind of get cucked for a little while here. And now those people are getting those people are getting paid off for something they shouldn't have gotten paid off for with this Najee injury. And then the thought came up of the lack of information around the Najee Harris thing. And again, I'm not a doctor. I live with one, but I'm not a doctor. I've seen a lot of firework accidents. But my question was, if they haven't released a lot, and then the thing that was brought to me was, well, remember JPP, how slow the JPP news was brought out? And it was like, well, yeah, JPP had an injury. And he'll be good.
He might have lost the tip of a finger.
And then he came back and it's like,
yeah,
three fingers. You're like, whoa. Yeah. And they say that Najee might have lost portions or percentages of his vision potentially in one eye or something. And I just am like, what if fill in the blank, right? What if he's got an eye patch on? What if he literally, like, for running back, you know how important vision is, obviously.
Yeah.
If he's a zero, like, how high does Amari and Hampton get? Do we need to be bullish right now? I know it's July, like late July, but there's drafts are starting to pick up. Like, if you're drafted right now, do you almost have to leave a draft with Amari and Hampton? Like, his ADP right now is sitting at 39. 2 months ago was 40. Like, it's been pretty much right in that 39-40 area. If Najee Harris is put on PUP or IR or ruled you can't play or vision, blah, 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 blah. This dude is drafted right before the season, August 30th, September 1st. Where? 10th overall?
9th overall? If Najee's out, yeah.
If Najee's out of the picture?
At the very least, yeah, at the 1-2 turn.
Is he the fourth running back off the board?
No.
Fifth running back off the board? Right by Genty?
He'd have to – people would have to sort it out between, like, yeah, Genty and Achan and Christian McCaffrey and Derrick Henry and stuff. If there was no Najee Harris in the picture, that's Amari Hampton, dude. So your question was, can you leave a draft without him? Yes, you can leave a draft without him because we're just waiting on more information, right, about Najee Harris. If it turns out that they're starting out the season in a 50-50 timeshare and a 50-50 split, then – you will have overpaid for him at his current ADP. With that being said, with the updates to the cheat sheets, I am happy to say it's like, whereas before I said, I love Amari and Hampton. I'm worried he costs a little bit too much. And I understood the arguments that we would get from like Matt Kelly or the arguments that I would get from Byron. But from what Byron said this weekend that really hit home with me was that, like, what are we doing? Like, how are we can't be fading Amari and Hampton. Like, even if Najee's fine, we can't be fading him because he's just so much better anyway. And so with the update to the cheat sheets, I've made sure in running tests that our exposure levels right now are commiserate with the amount that we love him, but also taking into account that there is this built-in downside to where if the stuff with Najee turns out to be a big nothing burger, that we're not gonna be reaching to get him right now. And that's the value of using something like the cheat sheet is that we're going to be Bayesian in our process. We're going to adjust as the ADPs adjust. When we see value, we're going to make sure that that value and that knowledge of that value is passed along to you guys through the visualization there in the sheet to make sure that you're leveraging ADP at every turn.